Thank you for joining us today. This is Heidi Rita Lopez, Principal City Planner with the LA City Planning Department, overseeing the Valley Community Planning Division. Welcome to the Latinos in Planning Division Plan Dulce podcast. This podcast is where we talk with Latina, Latino planners, and also about urban planning topics unfolding in Latino communities across the country. Today, I am joined by my co-host, Isaí Madrid. Isaí, can you please introduce yourself?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Isaí Madrid, and I'm currently doing my master's at Cal Poly Pomona. This semester, I was assigned a task in which I would do a project that would make a difference. Upon thinking about a project, I discovered that there are few Latino urban planners, and I wanted to find a space in which other Latino urban planners can share their stories and or experiences to future upcoming Latino planners.
That sounds excellent. Thank you so much, Isaí. And Plan Dulce is that connecting space where we are sharing those stories and experiences. And as Isaí mentioned, today we have an exciting topic about the importance of urban planning and engaging future Latino, Latina urban planners, which is our youth. With today's podcast, we have this unique opportunity where three generations of planners are coming together to talk about youth and planning with our guest of honor, David Salazar.
So it is our pleasure once again to welcome David Salazar. And if it's okay, I wanted to read a short bio. David Salazar is a FICP and is currently the executive director for the Long Beach Community Design Center. He has combined 29 years of campus planning and design experience in public and private universities and colleges. He holds a bachelor's degree in sociology from Cal State University Long Beach, a master's of urban and regional planning from Cal Poly Pomona, an executive MBA from Claremont Graduate University, and studies strategic management at Oxford and Anáhuac University, Mexico. David held positions with the Cal State University system as associate vice president for physical planning and facilities management at Cal State University Long Beach, director of campus planning and development at Cal State University Monterey Bay, and university facility planner at the chancellor's office. He has also served as director of facilities management at Claremont Graduate University, executive director of facilities planning and administrative services at San Bernardino Community College District, and chief facilities executive for the Los Angeles Community College District. David is a member of the College of Fellows American Institute of Certified Planners, the American Planning Association, and the California Planning Roundtable. He served as an adjunct faculty member in the Urban and Regional Planning Department at Cal Poly Pomona. So there is, that was a whole lot for David, but just wanted to share a little bit of who he was and his background. So once again, thank you, David, for sharing your time with us. And if it's okay, I would like to start off by asking you just a couple questions. The first question that I had was, how did you find out about the urban planning field and what influenced your calling to pursue a degree in urban planning?
Yeah. So the idea was sparked when I was at Cal Long Beach State, and I took some, you know, I majored in sociology undergrad, and so I took some classes in urban studies, and that's kind of where I made the connection in terms of working, you know, in cities and about cities and all that. I also had growing up in Pico Rivera, had a strong sort of political background through my brother involved in the Chicano movement. So we were always sort of in, you know, concerned about what was happening to our community and sort of doing things that would advance our community. So I had that sort of background, and I thought sociology would be perfect for me. And then when I found out about Long Beach, about urban planning, I thought, gee, you know, this sounds like right up my alley, and I can, you know, get involved in community and building community. So that's kind of where it started. But up until that point, I didn't know anything about, you know, what urban planning was, like a lot of planners, right? But it all worked out very, you know, really well.
When I actually was talking to Professor Cole, she mentioned that your trajectory is a little bit different than other planners that I've spoken with, which you actually are probably one of the few and only planners that I know that are actually working with youth. So that's the question that another question that I have for you is, what inspired you to work with youth and introduce them to urban planning?
Yeah. So right now, I'm sort of semi-retired, right? So I don't do campus planning anymore. And I decided about 2 years back, 3 years back, to create a nonprofit organization here in Long Beach. And primarily when I started out, it was related to sort of working with underserved communities, but providing pro bono services in terms of planning and architecture to kind of uplift those communities, provide that resource for them. And then out of that, because of my connections with Cal Poly Pomona, I thought, well, this is an opportunity to bring youth into that process, right? So they could see how things are sort of developed and what you need to do to make change in your community. So from that, it evolved into a program we created called the Young Community Planners of Long Beach. And we were able to connect with the Parks Department, right? And working with their teen centers. And you know, the different teen centers and the different high schools to expose them to urban planning. But I think the emphasis or the beginning, I thought about, you know, sort of my childhood too, right? And sort of the things that I grew up with and understanding that there's so much potential, both, you know, human potential as well as creativity in our community, that it just wasn't being tapped the way it should. And since I did have a background, you know, working in APA for many years, I thought to myself, well, here's another thing that APA really needs to get involved in a big way, right? Develop programs that actually cultivate that those young people and expose them to urban planning with the idea that they come back into their communities and make change, meaningful change, and change that reflects them as individuals, both culturally and where they come from, their lived experience. So that was kind of the intellectual kind of component of it, but it was really at the baseline, at the very basic level. It's really about investing in youth and understanding that if they want to pursue a career in urban planning, here's a way to get started.
And I guess a follow-up question to that is, how did you discover there was a need for inner city youth to get them involved in urban planning?
Yeah, so I made an assumption that they would be interested, right? Because it's one of those things, urban planning is kind of vague to a lot of people, right? And it's kind of like, well, everyone knows what an architect does. Everyone knows what an engineer does, that kind of thing. But when you say urban planning, it's kind of like this fuzzy sort of thing, right? Yeah. And, you know, and I thought to myself also that, you know, the people that and the populations that should be affecting their communities should be that community, right? It shouldn't be outside professionals or other people telling them or dictating or describing to them what needs to happen in their communities. So I thought, you know, why not go to the, you know, to the source and try to cultivate that youth in a way, kind of like a little youth movement around urban planning. And because I had my affiliation with Cal Poly, I thought to myself, this is a great opportunity to bring Cal Poly into the fold, right? To provide that resource and then, you know, obviously concentrate here in Long Beach. But the work that I'm doing now could actually apply to any community. I'm just starting here in Long Beach.
And can you just, I guess, briefly, like, can you share where your idea or motivation came from to work alongside with youth? Because like I mentioned, it's just very unique to find urban planners that want to work with youth overall. But where did that come from, the motivation or idea come from?
Well, part of it too is that, you know, just like a lot of Latinos growing up in sort of underprivileged, under-resourced communities, there's very little that you there's not much you can rely on, right? For you know, access to mentorship or coaching or anything like that. If it wasn't for my older brother going into higher ed at the time, and at the time, you know, one of the big thrusts in the Chicano movement was access to higher education, right? It was a big push, right? That as well as political representation, like in, you know, locally and statewide and nationally. So I always knew that, you know, you have to sort of reach out, right? And you have to provide those role models and those and that access. And I was fortunate enough that I had my brother, but I talk to a lot of young people now that they don't have that, right? They don't have that other person in their family or someone they can go and talk to. Because, you know, most of the Latinos, I mean, my dad was a truck driver, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. I couldn't talk to them about urban planning or about, you know, political movements or anything like that, right? So I think that's really important. That that was part of it, right? Because I felt that need myself, and I thought, well, if I'm feeling it, gee, you know, I'm not the only one that's feeling that same way, right? Especially coming from those communities.
And I guess the other question that I have to that is, what are you learning about the process in developing a program for young planners?
So, you know, my whole career was not really working with youth at all. It was really working in higher ed with faculty members and students and things like that, right? And you know, building buildings, planning, that kind of thing, you know, on a campus level. So I never really worked with youth, you know, zero, right? But, you know, what I'm learning now is that there's a lot of empathy that's necessary to work with youth, right? And understanding sort of where they're coming from. And there's generational differences, right? I mean, I'm at a very, you know, older generation compared to the youth I'm dealing with right now, right? Or talking with right now. But there's a lot of basic things that you could relate to that don't relate necessarily to age, because unfortunately some of the things that they're going through, I went through the same thing through. Nothing has changed too much, right? So it's not like I'm totally out of touch. And then when the other part of it too is that I'm learning that there's just so much work that needs to be done on the youth level, right? And we're talking basic stuff, you know, mentoring, coaching, describing things, you know, understanding sort of that their lived experience is it's valued, right? And it's not just something that, you know, they're just thinking about, right? That it can translate into different things related to urban planning. And it's really important and special in a way, right? Because they bring that experience to you know, ultimately of their profession and how they're going to practice eventually, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, we're all young at heart. That's the most important thing. Let's not forget that. Yeah,
I do have a follow-up, if I may, Isai. Sure. I, you know, in learning about the youth, David, do you have like a favorite story or an anecdote from one of the, I know you work with a lot of youth and you probably have multiple favorite stories. And I'm just wondering, is there one that in particular you're like, wow, I didn't know that, or something that you've learned and has inspired you?
Yeah. So one of the things, you know, there's these little pieces, there's little stories that'll emerge, right? So, you know, I went into this working with different youth at different parts of the city, right? And they're all underserved communities, right? But there was one, we put on this one session on gentrification versus revitalization, and I wanted to have a youth representative on the panel, right? So I reached out to this one young African-American student, and she's basically in ninth grade right now, right? But she was very sort of outgoing and all that, and I thought she'd be perfect for the panel. And then, you know, afterwards she came up to me and she said, this has been so fantastic. And this is, you know, I had this experience and all that. And sometimes, you know, you don't realize what those little things, you know, amount to related to another person, right? So it was just a simple thing being on a panel. You know, we all been on panels. I've been on a million of them. But for her, it was like this big deal, right? It was kind of like, wow, it was kind of like a coming out. So to me, that was kind of like, wow, you know, the impact that you can have on just simple things like that is amazing, right? And it's, again, it's about opportunity, about exposure and all that related to young people and providing that, you know, that venue for them.
So to me, it sounds like what you're want or what you're continuing to do is giving or the importance of giving the youth a power in their voice, a power mm-hmm. to be heard, similar to what you mentioned, like, you know, in the Chicano movement, Chicanos wanted to be heard, young Chicanos, as if, because they're the ones that started the whole walkouts, but there was a need, there was a desire for it. So it seemed like that's what you're projecting or wanting to the youth to see on others, like, hey, they have an important voice like we do, right?
Right. And you know, what I'm learning now too is that they understand their communities at a very deep level, right? And they understand what works, what doesn't work, what should happen, what shouldn't happen, why are decisions being made? It's just that no one's talking to them about sort of those issues, right? And you know, that one of the sort of thoughts that I have about the Young Community Planners of Long Beach is that, you know, now, you know, I don't think there was a question on this, but now we're working with Long Beach City College and Cal Poly Pomona to create this articulation agreement. So if students are interested in Long Beach when, you know, being planners, we're going to provide them a formalized academic pathway to get there to Cal Poly, right? So everything's falling into place related to that. And so part of it too is like, you know, a great idea or a good idea, it's gonna catch on. It's gonna like fire, right? And I think this is a great thing for both Long Beach City, the kids, and Cal Poly Pomona, and sort of directing them in this way that hopefully they can, you know, go to school, you know, graduate, and come back into their communities, or maybe go to another community, but have that idea that, you know, what their worldview and their life experience is meaningful, and it relates directly to what they want to do in life, right?
So speaking of ideas, this is the question that I have is, have your ideas working with youth and urban planning been received? Like, for example, have you gotten good or positive feedback? Like, how have your ideas been received so far?
It's been like 100% positive. I, you know, at first I thought to myself, well, I'm going to run into some challenges and I'm going to run into some roadblocks and, you know, people are going to poo-poo the idea or whatever, right? But it's been nothing but just positive feedback. And it also has a lot to do with timing too, right? You know, when I approached Long Beach City College and the folks there, they're in a position where, you know, enrollments are kind of tanking a little bit. So they're looking for opportunities to increase enrollment, right? And for looking for programs that they don't have available. So when I approached them, they were like, we're all over it. You know, we want to engage that. And then when I approached Cal Poly, because I knew, you know, the faculty members and all that, they want students too, right? And they want students from these communities. So it was a win-win for everyone all around. And when I was working with the parks to sort of put together these little workshops, they wanted programs like that too, because they just recently put together a youth strategic plan. And part of it is to engage young people in terms of exposing them to other professionals or professional fields that they normally wouldn't be exposed to, right? With the idea that potentially they'd go to college too. So it was all good. I mean, it's amazing how it's taken off.
I know earlier you mentioned you had probably like some challenges or maybe like some roadblocks. And I guess the question is, how did you resolve, you know, any challenges that maybe came about during the process of developing a program for community planners? Or did at any moment you're like, oh man, like I'm a little hesitant. I don't know if it's like, how did you resolve any of that?
Yeah, so I guess I'll just, from my standpoint, so I made my career in higher ed, right? So I knew how to sort of talk to faculty members, right? Because, you know, a lot of what I did at the higher level administrator is talking to faculty, right? And sort of figuring out sort of how you move through and move with initiatives and who you need to bring on board, like, you know, to make things happen. How do you partner? Right? How do you partner with groups and people and describe to them sort of what the benefits are and how that's going to benefit them and who else is involved? So I think those skills were, for me, I think if I didn't have those skills, it probably would have been tough, because I might have been intimidated. Well, I'm not going to talk to the superintendent. I'm not going to talk to the president. I'm not going to talk to the dean and, you know, that kind of stuff, right? But I was so used to it. It was just like natural. It's kind of like, here's an idea and here's how we're going to launch it. And this is how it's going to benefit you. And it's going to be great, right? And there's a little bit of a salesmanship thing involved. But at the same time, you know, working in that environment, they understood that too. So I think without that, it would have been tough because it would have been like, well, here's a guy with some crazy idea. Who is this person, right? Yeah.
Well, crazy ideas always are the best ones.
So. Yeah. And then, you know, the other thing too is that from the state of California, right, you have these segments of higher ed, right? You have community colleges, CSU and UC, right? And, you know, I looked at it like strategically too, and I thought to myself, well, I know the mission of the community colleges because I worked in there, and I know obviously the mission of CSU and UC. So I thought to myself, here's a plan, here's a program that is aligned with their mission, what they should be doing. So in a way, I kind of served them up, you know, like on a silver platter. Here's something that you guys can do, and I know it's going to be successful. It's just a matter of you partnering in the right way, and it's worked. It's fantastic.
And I guess for me, the other follow-up to that is, why is it important for you to be involved in the field of urban planning?
So I think, again, you know, my previous statement about youth, the voice of youth in planning, right? There's a couple of reasons. One is that, you know, eventually they're going to inherit everything that we do, right? What older people do and what, you know, society does in general, right? And what political government does, right? They're going to inherit that one way or another. So why not have them at the table up front to help inform some of those decisions? Because some of the decisions today is directly going to affect what's going to happen in the future. So that's number one. And then number two is that, you know, getting back to those different communities, they should be in a place of, you know, making those decisions as a professional, right? Influencing decisions, being involved in sort of navigating a lot of these issues, these social economic issues that are still, you know, present, right? That are negative, right? So that's the other part of it too. It's like, you can make a difference, and this is how you can do it. And you can make a living, right? And you can, you know, benefit, you know, your community and benefit society. And that's part of the reason I got involved in planning too, right? Because I was like, all planners, you know, have these big thinkers, right? And big idea people, right? But I always wanted to sort of bring that, those big ideas and big thinking at a local level, at a level where it's actually implement something and get something going, right? Related to some of those ideas.
Related to ideas, what is it that you most look forward to when it comes to working with you?
So part of my brain sort of works a couple of different ways on stuff, right? One is the, you know, looking at it from a programmatic standpoint, an administrative standpoint. What is the framework that I need to put together to make this work, right? Versus just an idea, right? So that's part of that part. And the other part is like figuring out what the programs would, or the focus of the program would have the most impact on the youth, right? In terms of exposing them to the things that I think they should be exposed to related to urban planning. And then actually, you know, seeing what those results are, right? And documenting those results. And we're just, you know, into the second year of this program. So there's still a lot of things that have to get refined and formalized. But for the most part, it's sort of taken on a life of itself. And like anything else, it takes time, right? You know, and that's something that planners need to understand too. When young planners I talk to, you know, you start something, but you know, it could take 3 years, it could take 4 years, it could take 5 years, right? It's not automatic, or it's not just instant. So those are the things that I think of all the time, you know, in terms of all that. But I've seen the results so far, and it's from the youth standpoint, and they're really receptive. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, David. I think that some of us are anxious sometimes, right? And we want to see immediate results. And I think that those are some really good words of wisdom Just knowing that things do take time, but in the meantime, you've laid out such a good framework for a lot of us to maybe study and follow, right? Maybe there's different formats that we could, you know, take on, if you will, depending on where we work. I know that Isai and I were involved with another podcast where we were talking about how can we reach the youth, right? What are some things that we could do now, like either whether it's going to career day at a local high school or volunteering. But I feel like in this conversation today, you've really spoken, at least to me, to my planning heart and to my teacher heart, because I feel like there's a lot of us that would love to do something like this. So it's just been very inspiring. And I would love to ask you, David, what are some other words of wisdom that you might have for some of us that are thinking about working with the youth, engaging with this intersection of youth and urban planning? You know, what are some words of wisdom or tips that you have for all of us?
Yeah. So working with youth I think it's fun, right? There's the fun part of it, right? That you typically planners don't get involved at that level, right? Because they're mostly thinking rational and putting together plans and strategic plans and general plans and blah, 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 and zoning and all that other stuff, right? So to step away from that and step away from being like the rational mind and talking to young people and asking them about, you know, what they're thinking about, right? What's important to them. And as even as adults, you know, things become important to us in our own way, right? And sometimes we get this little tunnel vision about what the world's all about and how to interpret the world and all that. And they're looking at it with a totally different lens, right? I think it's important for planners to being able to, and I'm working with the undergrads at Cal Poly on these workshops that we do. And part of it is like, how do planners sort of interpret, you know, urban planning to young people or to various audiences, right? So they can understand sort of what that all means versus, you know, an academic sort of PowerPoint presentation, right? And then what that means to their communities, and then what that means to them saying like, well, we want more parks, or we want more affordable housing, or we want more whatever the need is. And I think that's the power. And, you know, that's the power of sort of what planners can do and how they engage youth, right? Yeah. Versus us, you know, if it was up to me, I can come up with 10 different ways to improve a community, right? But that's just that those are just my observations about what it doesn't really matter what I'm thinking about is what they're thinking about and how they want to improve their community. They just need that assistance and those resources to make it happen. Yeah, I don't know if those are words of wisdom, but those are some of the lessons.
They are. And I think they're very humble. They're very humble because I think, you know, sometimes we need to obviously think about what is our role, right? As facilitators, as mediators, as communicators, maybe as, you know, maybe we're a bridge between different networks and different groups of people. And oftentimes we do, and I put myself in that we will put ourselves in that role, in that position of like, I'm here to present. It's like, no, I'm here to listen, right? Like there's a part of this where we need to be mindful and have that type of, how can I say, like emotional intelligence to do that, right? And to be aware of it. Some of us might have it naturally where we turn on that switch and we're like, I'm here to listen. I'm here to engage. I'm here to listen, right? In a respectful manner. And I'm here to learn. I'm here to learn from the youth as well. And I feel like maybe some of us that are open to that type of learning and reflection, we could learn so much by engaging with the youth. And I know it seems like, oh, it's extra time. I need to do this. I need to do that. But I think it's such a good investment, especially now as, you know, some of us are going back into the office, back to work, trying to solve for so many urban planning and quality of life issues. I feel like it's an untapped source that sometimes we haven't tapped into. But I'm just like, I'm really inspired. I don't know about you, Isai, to continue on this topic of exploring how do we best engage with the youth, right? In terms of like, you know, humbly going to the youth and asking, you know, how do you see the world and how can I as a planner be better informed and more well-rounded, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. And you know, and it's always these things that, you know, one of the things that, you know, one of the truths that comes out, right? That, you know, when we did this, I did this one workshop with some youth at a local library. And then we did this like a play-set kind of exercise, a project-based, you know, develop your own, your ideal neighborhood and all that. And what came out of the youth, and these were like young kids. These were like elementary, sixth grade, seventh grade. One of the things that came out was like, you know, what's the most important thing for you? It's like, and what came out was safety, right?
Yeah.
And so you're thinking, well, if you don't feel safe in your neighborhood, you know, all that other stuff doesn't matter, right? Zoning doesn't matter. General plans don't matter. None of that stuff, right? If you're not feeling safe in your community, and that's a basic kind of need, it's almost like food, right? If you're not safe, if you don't feel safe walking out down the street, getting harassed or, you know, whatever it may be, that's not a good thing. So that's just one example of sort of learning from them or learning from community members, what's the most important thing. And then once you learn that, then you can translate that and then figure out the connections between that and zoning and other things and all these things that planners think about on a regular basis, transportation or whatever. But that you know, it's sort of getting back to the basics in a way.
Sure is. And I just, you know, really appreciate how candid you've been about, you know, wearing your planner hat or wearing your facilitator hat. And I do have a curiosity, like what other hat do you find yourself wearing when you're trying to, you know, just navigate working with the youth and navigate, you know, these meetings that you've had with administrators to create these programs? What are some of those other hats? I know you've mentioned, you know, aligning mission and goals when you're talking to others, developing partnerships. But I'm just wondering, what other hats do you find yourself wearing?
So there's like an inner hat. There's, you know, like there's a mentor hat. There's a coaching hat. There's, you know, all these organizational person hat. I mean, there's all these multiple hats, right? That I think the one hat that's been new to me, and in a sense it's been a challenge too, is the fundraising part of a nonprofit, right? So you need money to make things go, right? Unlike, you know, I was always on the public side, I never had to worry about money. Money was coming all the time towards me, and I just figured out a way to spend it and build things and do things and all this other stuff. So now I'm in a different role, right? Now it's really, okay, so this is a great program. How do I sustain it long term, and what sort of funding partners do I need to make that work from a nonprofit standpoint? So that's the other hat that's new to me, because, you know, I've always been a good buyer, you know, because I was always buying services and buying things, but I've never been a good seller, right? So the seller part is selling the idea and selling the mission and all these good things related to youth and the other things that we're working on. So that's the other hat that's kind of interesting. The planners typically don't get involved too much in that, right?
In the fundraising aspect.
Yeah.
That's an excellent point. That's a very excellent point for some of us that are thinking along these lines, brushing up on our fundraising. Yeah. And I, you know, I'm not sure, Isai, if you have other questions that you might want to ask David, anything else that comes into mind or for you, David, that you're thinking, wow, I wish Isai and Heidi would have asked me this question, or anything else that comes to mind for you.
Just one last thing is, you know, the things that I'm working on right now, you know, I'm doing it because, you know, I believe in it 100%, right? Not only as a planner, but just as a person, as a Latino, right? The other thing is the institutional component related to APA. And I see that we were talking a little bit before we got started today, but I think APA has a major obligation to be involved in programs like this and to support programs like this, both at the statewide level and the national level. So it's one of those things where things just need to get started. The current president, Andrea Oates, is really behind this program right now, which is fantastic, right? But that's what it takes. It takes that leadership sort of adopting, you know, programs like this and understanding the importance of it. So hopefully, you know, this is just the beginning, and it'll take off even at a higher level across the profession, because there's a lot to be said about sort of when the institution sort of accepts and sort of promotes programs like this, because it doesn't, if it gets embedded in the institution and what those organizations do, then it's not going to go away, right? Where before it was just like a little fringe, you know, these little fringe ideas, but once it gets adopted, then it's very hard for it to go away in the future. And I think at least the chapter with Andrea's support is really moving in the right direction related to this.
Thank you so much for bringing that up, because not only have you been able to kind of weave your networks within the academic institutions, but now you're also weaving those extra supportive networks with the profession, with APA, along with, you know, with other schools in that pipeline. Mm-hmm. So thank you for bringing that up, because that's also going to continue to be important as some of us that I'm sure some folks are listening to this podcast and they're like, oh my gosh, I've always wanted to talk about this or learn how I can support it. So David, I'm just wondering, as part of this effort, are there other universities that have come knocking to your door saying, hey, how do we do this? Is it first starting off with Long Beach or Cal Poly Pomona, I should say?
Yeah. So, here at Long Beach City College, working with a program, it's called Architectural Design. And that program is sort of duplicated a lot of community colleges up and down the state, but there's no urban planning. So through this, what we're able to do through this program, now they're going to have an associate's degree in urban planning, and it's going to be the first associate's degree in urban planning in the whole state of California. So that's just an idea in terms of where it's moving, right? But I think in the future, it's really open to all the community colleges. It's just a matter of connecting that community college with another state university that provides a planning degree or a planning program. Or they can just graduate with their associate's degree and look for work then too. So
the AA is the Associates of Arts degree that is offered in the community colleges. And what is it called again?
So right now they have an associate's degree in architectural design, but with no planning emphasis or no planning sort of curriculum or anything. Now at Long Beach City College, through Cal Poly and working with Cal Poly, now they've developed this associate's degree in urban planning. So you'll be able to go through that program and get an associate's degree. And then the idea is that you would transfer to Cal Poly and be a third year student, and then hopefully graduate in 2 years and you'll have your undergraduate degree in urban planning. So that was the whole idea, is creating this pipeline, right? From working with the teen centers, you know, exposing them at a workshop level about what planning is and all of that. And then asking them, hey, are you interested in becoming a planner? Well, here's a way to do it, right? You just walk down the street, go to Long Beach City College, take these classes along with your GE, transfer to Cal Poly Pomona, and you're on your way.
Yeah. And, you know, the community colleges are such a key partner, because I know that I'm going to ask also Isai this question, but, you know, I remember one summer before I became a senior, I was part of this math and science program at East LA Community College. And because of that, I went on a field trip to go to my first major university campus. I went to UC Irvine, and I was like, wow, I never like knew, you know, where to even like, you know, ask for this type of resource to go visit a campus. So the fact that this is now available at Long Beach City College, and it could be a model for other community colleges, I think is such a great advantage. And the reason why I'm saying this, Isai, is because he's also a community college alumni, mm-hmm. right, Isai? And I'm just wondering if you would have had this available at El Camino, right? You went to El Camino?
Yes.
I'm just wondering if you would have taken a class.
I would have definitely had taken a class. I probably would have already know what urban planning was. So I'm always a big advocate for community colleges. That's something that the 6 years that I was working with youth, I'm like, hey, if you don't have an idea where to go to a community college, that's where you can get your start in. And this is just you know, for me, it's just, it's, I'm happy, but at the same time, I'm like, man, I wish they would have done this when I was in college. Like, I would have taken advantage of it, but, you know, I'm, for me, it's also just more of like a victory and just really overwhelmed with joy that the future generation are able to, you know, partake in something that I wasn't, you know, unfortunately able to, but I hope that they really take advantage of it, because that is true. Not a lot of Latinos, not a lot of people in low-income communities know about urban planning. They always think we're architects, but I'm like, no, we're we're a little bit above there. So I'm happy to hear that that's happening. I hope that, you know, the other 113 CCs, or maybe even the other, maybe 114, who knows, the other ones across California also, you know, really look at this like an engaging moment. So I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. And it's affordable, a lot more affordable than going directly to a four-year or UC or private, definitely a private school, right? So it fits the model, right, in terms of working with those communities, understanding that there's all these challenges that they have, right? Even just exposure to higher ed, period, right, versus, you know, just going to school and all this other stuff. So, I think it has tons of value. And it's not just because, you know, I came up with an idea and cultivated it. It was there to be had. It was just a matter of someone just saying, bringing it all together and saying, here's a way to do it. And of course, I have a bias towards urban planning, but I understand the power of urban planning and how that can affect neighborhoods and communities in a positive way, right? And especially for the people that come from those communities, they know exactly what needs to be done. And they know exactly what to advocate for and the things that are going to make their improve their quality of life.
Thank you so much, David. And as we're nearing some of the, you know, the conclusion to this podcast today, we do have some other fun questions for you. All right. I know you mentioned you also grew up in Pico Rivera. You worked in Long Beach. For our listeners that are wondering, wow, if I ever pass by Long Beach or go to Pico Rivera, what are some fun places you recommend for people to stop by and eat something or just visit?
So in Pico, you know, believe it or not, I haven't been back in so long, right? And my mom, you know, they moved a while back, and now my mom and dad are passed. So I really don't have any connection too much to Pico, but there's a lot of good Mexican restaurants, that's for sure. And they're in Pico. And then in Long Beach, there's tons of stuff to do in Long Beach, right? You know, from visiting the waterfront to all kinds of different things. So, you know, Southern California, we're sort of blessed in that regard, right? So those would be about the only things I could think of, yeah.
Okay. If you're having a meeting in Long Beach, do you have like a favorite coffee shop or a tea, go get tea or something?
Yeah,
like?
Yeah. So there's some coffee shops around here in the downtown areas. There's some good restaurants too. There's a lot of stuff happening on Second Street here in the downtown area. Yeah, you know, it's funny, you know, just like anything else, you know, you live in a bigger city, right? And Long Beach is not like LA, right? It's smaller in scope. But for some reason, you stay on one side of town, and you don't really go to the other side of town. So now that I'm here and I have an office space here in downtown Long Beach, it gives me more access to what's happening downtown. And then all the schools that I'm working with are located on the west side. So I'm here more and more. But there's a lot of variety here in Long Beach in terms of there's Cambodian food and Mexican food, obviously, Filipino food, you know, all kinds of Italian food, you know, Peruvian food. I mean, it's endless, right?
Yeah. Awesome. And because we are the Plan Dulce podcast, our last fun question is about if you were to have churros or pan dulce, what is your favorite?
So I think on the pan dulce side, ever since I was a kid, I used to love those gingerbread gochis. We used to call them gochis, right? And I didn't know they were called gingerbread until way later. I just liked them. Right? And I like the little skin, you know, that little skin that's on them. That's kind of like that. It's like a glaze on it. So I think pan dulce is probably, although I like churros, but I'll always go for it. The little gochis and stuff.
Are those the little marranitos, the ones
yeah.
that Yeah.
They're kind of big. Yeah. It's like yeah. shaped like oh. a little pig. It's like yeah. a shaped pig.
Those yeah. are so good. They come with that sweet sugar called dulce. Yeah. In Spanish, it's dulce piloncillo, right? It's a different kind of sugar. It's not just sugar. It's dulce piloncillo, but it comes with that glaze. I know exactly what you're talking about.
double the sugar.
Well, David, we just really want to thank you for your time. If you know, if there's anything else, Isaiah, that you want to say before I close it off.
No, I just want to once again thank you, David, for you know sharing and inspiring all of us to you know continue our work as urban planners, but also keeping in mind that there are youth out there that want to know about urban planning. I think you know you've said this. I don't know. It's like it's pretty hard. It's a little hard to frame it, but for me, I'm just, you know, thankful and happy to know that there are, you know, an organization like yourself that is working with youth and youth are really showing that, hey, somebody cares about us and we're being heard. So I just want to thank you for that. And hopefully, you know, one day I can stop by your office and be like, hey guys, I'm here too.
Yeah. No, you're welcome to stop by anytime. Yeah.
Well, again, thank you so much. It's been our honor to host you today, David. We want to thank our guest, David Salazar, for joining us on this very inspirational podcast. This was an amazing way to end the week. To learn more about David's story and to find other episodes of Plan Dulce, you can find us on Anchor, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Take care, and we'll talk next time. You know, David, you're just such an inspiration. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Of course.
And what I didn't mention, it's too late now, is that the whole AICP thing, right? And about being a fellow and all that, and being the only Latino fellow in the whole state of California.
You can still talk about it. It's still recording. We'll fix it. Yeah, go for it.
Oh, okay. So I'll make it short, right?
Oh, no, yeah, of course.
So part of the whole professional development part of, you know, being a planner that I always took very seriously was, you know, investing in APA, even though, you know, when I first started, there weren't that many Latinos involved in APA at the statewide level, especially at the national level. But I took it upon myself to invest in the organization because I knew the importance of it, right? From a professional level, as well as just, you know, making a political statement, like being in the room, right? And being involved in activities and all that. So that was one of the reasons I, you know, became AICP and then eventually decided to, you know, pursue the fellowship, right? And so when I did pursue the fellowship, and this was, what, 3 years ago, you know, lo and behold, I looked at the roster in California and there was not one Latino or Latina on that roster. And so I thought to myself, oh my God, I can't believe it. California, of all places in the whole country, there's no Latinos that are FAICP. So it was like, no, it was like a slap in the face, kind of, right? And then the other part of me thought, well, how did that happen? It's like, what the hell happened? You know, it's like, really? It took David from Pico Rivera to be a FAICP? And I was like, come on, give me a break. So I did, you know, and I, you know, and eventually I became, you know, I got inducted and all that other stuff, but it really told me something that was, you know, still seriously wrong in the profession, that it's, you know, we're talking 2022, and that was the first time, right, that a Latino would be AFSAP. So that's totally wrong. And Miguel Vasquez is applying this year. Hopefully he'll get it. So he'll be number two. I told him, you're going to be number two, so you're going to have to carry the torch now. But there's something definitely wrong with that. And I think it just gives me more, personal sort of, you know, commitment to making to make things better, right? In that regard. And it's not like, you know, you have to be a fellow or you have to be AICP to be a good planner. That's the two don't, you know, are not necessarily connected. But the fact that you have a professional organization that's supposed to reflect populations and all populations in a in a state or a region, and you have that kind of stuff going on, that's not a good thing. So will it change? I'm hoping it will now. And eventually it's one of those things you just chip away. But it just told me, it sent a message to me. It's kind of like we still got a long way to go.
Yeah, thank you for reminding us of the importance of that aspect of our professional development. I know that the APA Latinos and Planning Division does have an AACP study group that they just started. So whether you're taking the exam this season or in the spring, I know that the APA Latinos and Planning Division is trying to create some support and also like study group sessions. So thank you again, David. It's been our honor to host you here today. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.